Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Yesterday, the American Jewish Committee issued the second report on the state of anti-Semitism in America, which began in response to the deadly Tree of Life synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh in 2018. The findings from these reports noted concerns about rising anti-Semitism in the United States, and in this year's report, a grave concern about a growing ignorance about anti-Semitism within the general population, and a reluctance by 72% of Americans to acknowledge anti-Semitic speech and acts when they are called out by Jewish persons or organizations. My guest today will be a speaker in a series co-sponsored by the AJC Dallas and the Jewish Federation of Tulsa. The Rise of Anti-Semitism in Turbulent Times will feature the AJC's U.S. Director for Combating Anti-Semitism, Holly Huffnagel, Thursday evening at 7 in a virtual lecture. Prior to her current work, Huffnagel served as the Assistant Director for AJC Los Angeles, and previously she was a State Department Special Envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism, and also served as a researcher at the Mendel Center for Advanced Holocaust Studies at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. She'll be speaking about anti-Semitism in the digital age, as well as the report which came out yesterday. She's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Holly Huffnagel, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The American Jewish Committee released its State of Anti-Semitism Survey Tuesday, and one of the key findings is pretty disturbing, that almost half of Americans have either never heard of or don't know what the term anti-Semitism means. That is a pretty tough job for somebody like you, whose job is to combat anti-Semitism. What was the key survey finding for you?
That was one of them, Rich. It is challenging for me because anti-Semitism is in my title. And to know that nearly half of Americans don't know what it means, it means I have my work cut out for me. But AJC conducted this survey, this report, because it's actually two surveys. One survey of what Jewish Americans think about anti-Semitism, and then one survey of what the general public thinks. We conducted this survey to get a sense of what is the state of anti-Semitism in America 2 years after Pittsburgh, which is the anniversary, October 27th, 2 years later. And I think one of the big findings for me was a divergence in views between American Jews and the general public on anti-Semitism as a problem and if it's increased. And what we found was 8 in 10 American Jews, 82%, said anti-Semitism has increased in the past 5 years, where only 4 in 10, so half that number, 4 in 10 members of the general public, 43%, believe it's escalated. And in the last 5 years, Rich, has been not just the murders in Pittsburgh, but also Poway and Jersey City, Muncie, the continuous attacks in Brooklyn. But there's this gap in awareness amongst the general public.
Can I ask you a question that goes beyond perceptions? Has the actual number of anti-Semitic events increased in the last 5 years? We know about these very tragic, high-profile events, but is the actual number actually increasing?
So overall, in the last 5 years, yes. There's been a couple dips and waves, et cetera, but FBI data shows this increase. We know between 2013 and at least 2018, there's 150% increase in anti-Semitism. Of course, with these high-profile incidents, it is also showing us that anti-Semitism is becoming more violent and more open. But we do have the data to show that the incidents are increasing as well. And that I should say that could be more people are reporting anti-Semitism. So the more people that report anti-Semitism, of course, those numbers go up. But I think one key finding of our survey that we just did was that 76% of American Jews who were the recipients of an anti-Semitic attack or remark did not report. So we know that three-fourths of the anti-Semitism that's happening in America, at least in the last 5 years, really wasn't reported by the Jewish community. So that's also a disturbing finding when we are already seeing this rise.
What were some of the other key findings? A lot of the survey did contrast how American Jews look at these events and how non-Jews look at these events.
Right. So another key finding, with at least with a comparison between Jews and non-Jews, I mentioned earlier about the increase. One was just on the state of antisemitism in general, this problem, and 9 in 10 American Jews, and this is the exact same number as last year, 88% believe that antisemitism is a problem in the U.S., where only 63%, 6 in 10 American general public believe that it's a problem. So that was one other comparison we did. We also did a comparison on knowledge of the Holocaust and on the importance of Holocaust education. And while, you know, the majority, I mean, up to 99% of American Jews know something, if not a lot, about the Holocaust, that number was different for the American public. We did find that 1 in 4 Americans, so 25%, knew nothing or little at all about the Holocaust. Which, you know, we have other numbers to corroborate that there is a waning knowledge, unfortunately, amongst millennials and Gen Z that the Holocaust happened. Of course, the survivors are passing on. On the flip side of that, though, 75% of Americans said they knew something or even a lot about the Holocaust. And one key data point, which I think is a positive, was that 90% of Americans believe that it is important, either very important or somewhat important, to teach the Holocaust in middle school and in high school. So that was another interesting comparison and potentially a good one. And the last one I'll mention, and this might deserve some conversation, actually. We asked the general public if a Jewish individual's perspective on what is anti-Semitism or a Jewish organization's perspective on what is anti-Semitism, if that would be taken into account when they determined, you know, something that was anti-Semitic. And at this point in the survey, I should note that we did explain to the general public what was anti-Semitism. So that nearly half that didn't really know the term, we didn't keep asking them questions about anti-Semitism without telling them what it was. So they did know by the time they got to this question about, you know, would someone who was Jewish or a Jewish organization, would that help you in determining anti-Semitism? And we found something really interesting. We found that 7 out of 10 Americans, 72%, said that if a Jewish person or organization considered a statement or idea to be anti-Semitic, it would either not make a difference to them, that was 65%, or actually it would make them less likely to consider it anti-Semitic. And, you know, that was a very interesting finding. We have to ask ourselves, well, does that 65% that said it wouldn't make a difference, do they already know what it is? Do they not need help from someone who's Jewish in explaining what persecution against Jews looks like? Maybe. But the other question is, you know, are Jews not being listened to? And definitely that's the case for the people that said less likely, right, 7%. Are they not being listened to define the persecution and hatred against them? You know, we look to you know, the African-American community to define anti-Black racism, or to the Muslim community to define Islamophobia, or, you know, to the LGBTQ plus community to define homophobia, transphobia. So why aren't we going to the Jewish community to define anti-Semitism? And that actually is a question. Like, are we somehow disavowing Jews of their agency to define them, to hatred against them, and is that anti-Semitic? So that was something else that came out of the survey.
That was a key finding for me, and it actually sort of, you know, you talked about all these other communities that will define what is racist, homophobic, and I think there is a good portion of the population that says, no, I'm not going to let this population tell me what that viewpoint that I may or may not hold is racist, homophobic, or anti-Semitic. Right. And I think this is a big, big issue within our society.
I think so, too. And what's so difficult, Rich, if I may, with anti-Semitism, I think this gets to the heart of the issue of why it's so challenging to let Jews define anti-Semitism. It's different from other forms of racism and prejudice. So, yes, it's a hatred towards Jews as other, or hatred because of their religion or their race, or, you know, and we see this with white supremacy as well. But it's also kind of a hatred toward them for things that people assume they have, right? This conspiracy theory about Jewish power or control or money. It's almost this like positive thing that people might scapegoat Jews for or be jealous of and assail them for that. And it's this conspiratorial piece, this irrational piece of anti-Semitism that really makes it different. It's not just the hatred of Jews, and that's all part of our conversation of how we fight it, because it's very complex, and many people don't necessarily recognize this other side of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and it's scapegoating that officials, demagogues have used for centuries in persecuting the other. It's American Jewish and worldwide Jewish communities have faced this. And it's this idea at the heart of conspiracy theories that seem to especially show up during turbulent times when there's unrest, when there's economic unease, when there's political unease. And we have all of those factors today.
Exactly. And we're seeing that rise in conspiracy theories, and not just anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, although I might make the argument that at the root of many conspiracies is some kind of anti-Semitism. When we look at the two millennia of Jews being blamed as other, as controlling, as that secret cabal or Illuminati in power controlling things, like that is at the heart of so many conspiracies. We can see that, but that's one of the biggest reasons for the increase today, and especially online, where there aren't any gatekeepers to fact check these theories. I don't even want to call them theories, maybe just conspiracism.
Yeah. One of the things your survey took on was how both Jews and non-Jews viewed the political parties in their statements of as being anti-Semitic or not. And you found some very interesting results. It all depended on the beholder, didn't it? And where their political ideals lie.
Right. And one thing, I'll actually share with our listeners what we found first, and then I'll kind of analyze it a little bit. So we asked, AJC, I should say, this is a 501c3. We're not partisan. We don't endorse elected official for office. But we did ask both the American public and American Jews, where did they see anti-Semitism, either within the Republican Party or within the Democratic Party? We did find an alignment between those who said one thing and who they were voting for. So it's very easy, right, to see. It's only natural, I think, sometimes as humans, but we need to challenge ourselves to see anti-Semitism or hatred on the other side. It's that easy to point fingers, but we need to also look within and see anti-Semitism within our own party and maybe fight that first, actually start with us, if you will. But results from both surveys indicated that more Americans attribute anti-Semitic views to the Republican Party than to the Democratic Party. So we found that majorities of respondents in both surveys, both Americans and American Jews, said that the Republican Party holds a lot or some anti-Semitic views. And so more than two-thirds of American Jews said this, 69%, and then over half of U.S. adults, 52%, said that. That's compared to 37% of American Jews and 42% of the general public who say the same about the Democratic Party. So you can kind of see those numbers reversed, where more American Jews said that the Republican Party held anti-Semitic views compared to U.S. adults, versus the U.S. adults, a few more said that the Democratic Party had more anti-Semitism issues than American Jews. And I do think that goes down to party lines. I do. But I also think it comes down to sources of anti-Semitism today. That was another question that we asked, where American Jews saw threats of anti-Semitism, like the biggest threats. And by far, the far right posed the biggest threat to American Jews. I think 89% said it posed a threat, compared to 61% who said the far left posed a threat. And I think there's this connection between, far right, white nationalists, white supremacists, that traditional xenophobic anti-Semitism, the anti-Semitism that kills, and I hate saying it that way, but with Pittsburgh and Poway, that is connected to even right-wing, far-right politics in some way. And I think that's why we were seeing some of the numbers with a little bit higher on the Republican side.
My guest today is Holly Hufnagel. She is the American Jewish Committee's U.S. Director for Combating Anti-Semitism. The AJC released their State of Anti-Semitism Survey Tuesday. She'll be speaking Thursday at the AJC Dallas and Jewish Federation of Tulsa's virtual lecture series, The Rise of Anti-Semitism in Turbulent Times. She'll be speaking Thursday evening at 7 o'clock, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I really found it interesting as you were looking at the traditional sources of anti-Semitism. You mentioned the far right, the hard left, extremist in the name of Islam. You can add the fourth, which is ignorance.
Right.
That's a tall order. Now, you're going to be speaking on anti-Semitism in the digital age. And I think just like a lot of conspiracy theories or conspiracism, everything is thrown out on the internet. How has that affected anti-Semitism, and how is the ability for like-minded people to find each other on the internet, how has this affected trends in anti-Semitism?
It's affected it greatly, Rich, to be honest. And I think those of us in this fight are really only beginning to realize how far these networks are growing and going online. I mean, we're aware of it, but we don't really know. Some of us are working on it right now. I say often that when we look at the history of anti-Semitism, even, you know, two millennia, even to the time of Christ and before, we have all those sources still with us today. You know, we have the sources from the far right rooted in Christian anti-Judaism, that traditional source. We have it from the far left, you know, connected again with these, you know, tropes of Jewish power and control and money. We have it from religious extremists, including the Islamist extremists. We also see it in the form of Holocaust denial as well. And there is one place today where all of these sources exist at once, at the same time. And that's the internet and on social media. And because, unfortunately, many of these platforms, and we can talk about how the good things that, you know, the internet has done for us, of course, in the fight against anti-Semitism, because it has revealed, you know, there's good as well. But the negative is that it has brought these bad actors together. And we noticed this with the kind of cross-pollination of maybe misogynists or anti-Semites, white supremacists, maybe people who might have been in separate circles, but certain algorithms with the platforms they're on are bringing them together, and they're uniting over this common hatred. And often at the root of some of these common hatred is hatred against someone who's Jewish. So this is a big issue.
Now, how much of these conversations and meetups are taking up on the regular web, or how much are on like the dark web?
I think most of it is on the dark web. And again, my expertise really still is on the mainstream platforms, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, you know, these kinds of spaces as well. Spaces where right now we're actually seeing increased engagement from the executives of these companies in trying to work with civil society groups, trying to work with these communities, whether it be Jewish communities or Muslim communities or Black communities, on defining what that prejudice looks like, how to get it off their platforms, how to do better. There's so many more ways that improvement is needed, to be honest, Rich. And there is concern about the business model, right, of fear and anger and hate generating more clicks and keeping people on their platform, which at the end of the day is what these platforms want. They want that continued engagement. So we're kind of up against the model that they want and need to survive, and then getting that hate off their platform. But I still believe the majority of you know, anti-Semitic vitriol, the attacks that have led to murders, have been on more fringe sites, whether that be like 4chan or what used to be called 8chan. These are that's all called 8kun, these messaging boards that operate under the guise of like anonymity. So it's a favorite of those, especially on the far right, because it's these anonymous posting places. Gab was another one that was used, for instance, by Robert Bowers before he went and murdered the 11 worshipers in Pittsburgh. But I think one of our concerns at AJC is ensuring that this anti-Semitism doesn't leave the fringe. And that's what, you know, I think we're afraid of, and I'm afraid of, is that it is, and it has, and there is. One individual might have an account on 8chan or 8kun, but also has a Facebook account, also has an Instagram account, has a TikTok account, and is sanitizing those mainstream accounts, but people can still connect. And we see this especially with QAnon, the QAnon conspiracy, which started out on this fringe platform and has entered the mainstream, to where Facebook had to do a massive overhaul of all the QAnon Facebook pages and community groups and supporters just this summer.
and how anti-Semitic at its core is QAnon? I know that a lot of times it takes a political bent towards anti-Democratic Party figures, but somewhere down in its heart, there's also a strong current of anti-Semitism.
Said it perfectly. Down at its heart, it's a strong current of anti-Semitism. So
when I think of Soros, you know, the Soros money,
yes,
and those tropes of, you know, Jewish money supporting these abhorrent views that they say that are out there.
It, absolutely. So just for our listeners who may not be familiar with QAnon, although
it's gone mainstream.
Mainstream, exactly. But it's, you know, this loosely organized far-right network of people that believe that a satanic cabal of pedophiles and cannibals, again, mostly made up of Democrats, but politicians, the media, journalists, Hollywood, are controlling this deep state against the government, and again, trying to undermine President Donald Trump. So there's the political piece of it. But this is where the anti-Semitism comes in. The conspiracy theories about Jewish elites, whether it be Jews in the media, Jewish journalists, Jews in Hollywood, globalists, bankers, these are part and parcel of this belief system as well. You mentioned Soros. The Rothschilds are also a consistent target. And the nefarious anti-Semitic forgery, Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was published and debunked quickly, but still published in the early 1900s, is invoked by QAnon supporters and elevated by political leaders. And I think the last point that really gets to the heart of the anti-Semitism, and this is a real challenge, is the use of children and this idea of sex trafficking children or needing children for some nefarious purpose is what QAnon is saying is happening. You know, these Democrats are controlling this trafficking ring. It does harken back to the medieval blood libel accusation against Jews, where Jews were accused of needing Christian children, of using or abusing Christian children for ritual purposes and practices. And this killed thousands of Jews in various communities throughout what was Western Europe. And so that is also something that I think the Jewish community hears, and it's that dog whistle for these you know, kind of even more nefarious accusations of the past.
My guest today is Holly Huffnagel. She's the American Jewish Committee's U.S. Director for Combating Anti-Semitism. The AJC released their second survey on the state of anti-Semitism in the United States. I'd like to take this a little broader. And, you know, when we think of anti-Semitism, we know there are issues in the United States, but we also think of, like, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, of having broader issues. And that has been certainly pronounced over the last 10 to 20 years, and especially in the last few years. Are there connections being made between what's happening in Central and Eastern Europe and here in the United States today?
Absolutely. And I think we should be clear that, you know, anti-Semitism is a global problem. It's not unique to the United States. What happens in the U.S. does not happen in a vacuum by any means. And some of the issues which are causing or leading to the rise in anti-Semitism in America, whether it be the rising global economic uncertainty or a fading trust in government and liberal democracy or a increased emphasis on race and national identity, fading legacy of the Holocaust even, those factors that are contributing to the rise here are the same factors contributing to rises in anti-Semitism in other parts of the globe and especially in Europe. And, you know, you mentioned Western Europe and Eastern Europe. And of course, it's actually very even some different sources. You know, we noticed in 2010 and on, you know, increased attacks against Jewish communities by Islamist extremists who killed Jews in Toulouse, in Brussels, in Paris, in Copenhagen. And this is really where we were seeing the anti-Semitism. And if you look to Eastern Europe, we saw anti-Semitism more in the form coming from, you know, again, the far right, but also in the form of Holocaust denial and distortion by some of these countries. So, again, Jewish communities are experiencing it very differently, but there were some lessons that I think we're able to learn from. And one thing about AJC, which I should note, is, you know, we're the American Jewish Committee, but we're a global advocacy organization, and we have 13 posts and offices around the world. The latest announcement was we're opening a post in the United Arab Emirates, but we have several offices in Europe, and so we were able to learn from our colleagues on how to kind of this rise of anti-Semitism, which happened decades before it did here in the United States. And I think two big lessons coming out of their experience of the rise of anti-Semitism was, you know, we have to be aware of the problem early. We have to call it out, even if it might not be politically expedient or correct. And I say this because there was a challenge, especially in France, to name another group of people, a minority group, segments of that minority group, small segments of the Muslim community that were, you know, anti-Semitic, and it was causing, you know, the deaths of Jews in Europe. Again, this is the Islamist extremist piece. Again, I want to make that very, very clear, but there was still this hesitancy to name it. And I think here in the United States, like, you know, it's very easy to call out anti-Semitism from white supremacists, you know, and point to them as the, this is all from the right. But we look to the murder of Jews in Jersey City, or the attack that eventually killed one of the Jewish individuals in Monsey in New York, or the continuous attacks in Brooklyn. And it's not far-right white supremacy. So, we have to be able to be honest about where anti-Semitism is coming from. And the last thing I'll talk about lessons is this is a societal issue, and it needs to be a sustained, the effort needs to be sustained. I think we saw in Europe this idea or belief that this is a Jewish problem. So the Jewish communities of Europe or law enforcement or the government need to fight it. It's not necessarily for civil society to fight. And that can't be the case. Civil society has to be involved in it. Non-Jews have to be involved in the fight against anti-Semitism. And the sustained effort piece is key. We saw once the governments, and especially in France and in Belgium and other Western European countries, came around to recognizing that there is a problem of anti-Semitism in our countries, they had conferences, and altruistically, I mean, rightfully so, they were trying to figure it out, having a conference, having, you know, more security around Jewish synagogues and institutions. But those are band-aids. You know, they're not going to solve the issue in the long run. And that sustained effort needs to be made. And we're going to make sure that that's done here in the U.S.
Well, it sounds like from your survey results, education is going to be a big part of the solution.
It is going to be a very big part of the solution, especially when we can look at our data and see that the highest number of individuals who did not know the term anti-Semitism, or who did not know anything at all or very little about the Holocaust, had a high school diploma or less. So it does go to show that education is going to be very much part of, you know, of our advocacy.
Holly Hufnagel, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
Holly Hufnagel is the American Jewish Committee's U.S. Director for Combating Anti-Semitism. The AJC released their State of Anti-Semitism in America report yesterday. She'll be speaking about that and anti-Semitism in the digital age Thursday evening at 7 in a series co-sponsored by AJC Dallas and the Jewish Federation of Tulsa titled The Rise of Anti-Semitism in Turbulent Times. If you'd like to view this virtual lecture, go to ajc.org/Dallas/antisemitism to pre-register for the lecture. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.